demonstrated that even a pile of coal can yield diamonds. Uh-oh. Am I starting to echo Cain? That's not a good sign. Gira, take the left passage. Cain, take the right one. I assigned the groups as soon as we reached the second level of the dungeon. Clear out everything and meet up as soon as we encounter the boss. On the double! The second and third levels of the dungeon only earned my avatar another level, and only then, thanks to my XP bar already being fairly full. There were no further bosses with the Devour ability, so Gira and Cain and their men had free rein to destroy anything and everything. To my immense chagrin, there were no further items for me among the loot. Sure, the loot that was there would make Magdi and Klutzer quite happy, as well as our rank and file, especially our alchemists, but that didn't suit me at all.
"There's the stairway to the fourth level,"
Gira pointed at the shimmering staircase.
"That should be the last one before we reach the Glarness throne room."
"You're coming nearer and nearer. I can sense you,"
the unseen creature spoke into my head again. I would guess that this is none other than Urusei himself. Who else could it be? 3 times I tried to yell at him, and all 3 times all I got was Anastaria. It seemed like the telepathic link only worked in one direction.
"Recon!"
Cain barked at 3 of his men, who instantly vanished into the shimmering glow. Having cleared 3 levels without suffering any casualties, with no devourers in sight, the necromancer was beginning to feel confident. Prematurely, as it turned out. The frames belonging to Cain's 3 scouts first went dim, indicating that the warriors were between levels, then appeared green again as they entered the 4th level, and then vanished. And I mean vanished, as if they'd never been, instead of going gray from being killed. In one fell swoop, someone had just struck 3 level 320 scouts out of Barleona. It's a good thing those weren't Gira's boys.
Plinto?
I looked at the rogue inquisitively.
"Oh, go check it out," the rogue responded, casting invisibility on himself and taking a deep swig from some bottle. "If I don't return, I request a hero's funeral," the vampire joked and dived into the passage. "Looks like a boss. Jaws,"
appeared in the raid party chat, right before Plinto's frame went gray. My level 351 rogue, who had no equal on this continent, nor would have one in the foreseeable future, hellfire notwithstanding, had been killed in 3 seconds, even though he had used every spell he had to make himself undetectable. Wow! What is up there?
"Give me a sec," said Anastaria as her eyes glassed over.
"It's odd, but I cannot sense my warriors anymore," said Cain anxiously. "Have we encountered another devourer?"
"It's looking like it," I replied unwillingly. If Plinto and 3 scouts could fall in a matter of moments, it's probably not a good idea to set foot on that 4th level, without making preparations, at any rate. I needed to mull this over.
"Okay, here's the situation," said Anastaria upon returning back into the game. As I assumed, she had spoken to Plinto by phone. "As soon as you reach the 4th level, you find yourself in an enormous maw with hundreds of sharp fangs. The boss's level isn't clear, so it must be higher than level 381. Free citizens are sent to the Greylands, while locals vanish forever. The maw removes them from Barleona. Plinto will respawn in 6 hours and reach us in another 5. Any ideas?"
"We wait,"
Gira and Kane replied in unison.
If those jaws annihilate everyone except for free citizens, you should be the ones to deal with it. I agree. In that case...
Stacy, when I give the order, cast a bubble on me, I said, merging with my elemental spirit and casting all the buffs I had at my disposal on myself. The important thing at the moment was to keep the girl from speaking. Something told me that I needed to go have a look at this boss on my own, despite his insanely high level. Plinto will be 50% weaker by the time he returns, since Garanika's buff will expire by then. It's expired for me already. Okay, I'm ready. At the count of three. One, two...
If you die, I'm gonna kill you.
Three. Without doubting that the bubble had indeed been cast on me, I stepped into the shimmering field separating the levels. Let's see what kind of mouth this is. Greenery. Greenery and teeth. Many teeth and much vegetation, interspersed with a pale white palate and a pink tongue. A mere second went by before the jaws snapped shut and began to chew noisily, making repulsive noises and trying to flatten me. The bubble saved me. I didn't even have time to consider how large this creature must have been if it had such a maw, nor how it had managed to situate itself under Glarnus. Losing invaluable seconds, I shut my ears against the terrible roar of the monster. The bubble that Stacy had cast on me prevented the jaws from tearing me apart, yet the force of their compression against the indestructible sphere around me was so intense that I had simply punched a hole in the boss's jaws. The enormous jaws swung ajar again instantly as a pained bellowing filled everything, deafening me. Black slime gushed from the two circular wounds, and, reaching the pink tongue, the slime began to smoke like acid, dissolving the muscle. I glanced at the bubble's timer. 4 seconds. Understanding that I wouldn't have time to do anything else, I turned and dived back for the staircase.
Ragrid wishes to resurrect you. Do you accept?
What do you think?
Asked Anastaria as soon as I returned. I think that hurt a lot, I shuddered, recalling my last sensation before dying. The bubble vanished, and the slime that had coated it had fallen on me. The pain had been so hellish that I couldn't even scream. I simply didn't have the strength. It seemed to me like the pain was eternal, but my log showed that the black slime required only 2 seconds to send me off to the Greylands.
Okay, but if we return to the boss, how are we going to beat him?
I think that we need to...
Level gained, level gained, level gained, level...
10 notifications announcing that I had gained a level flashed past my eyes, forcing me to collapse to my knees in elation. All this time I've been in Barleona, I've grown accustomed to the jolt of pleasure I get from leveling up, but never have I ever gained 10 levels at once. For someone as conditioned as I was, this was just too much.
"Dan?"
Stacy said somewhere at the fringes of my consciousness.
"Dan, wake up! You're scaring me!"
"Oh, God! How amazing this feels! Leave me alone!"
"You are nearly there. A single obstacle remains."
It was Urusai's words, not Anastaria's, that brought me back to myself. It looks like we're already expected. As soon as we emerge from Glarnus, an entire host of phantoms will fall on us. I'll need to warn everyone, but first, I need to find out who Urusai is
and why Guernica is so unhappy with him.
It's clear, concluded Cain after sending another one of his men into the shimmering barrier. The beast has destroyed its own self. Anastaria, if you don't mind, cast another couple bubbles on my men. They need to cut away through the maw.
Plinto already had his boss, the one that stopped the mercenaries, and this boss, who stopped Guernica's squad, was designed for me and my bubble, said Anastaria after I told her what had happened. So it follows that there is only one boss remaining for the shaman. Get ready, Mayan. It'll be your turn soon. Let me go warn Plinto that we're about to revive him. Mayan, I don't know how you'll be able to carry this, but we can't just leave this, said Gera, pointing at a heap of flesh.
A terrifying heap. Looking at it, I felt like I was at the butcher's shop, choosing a juicier tidbit. There aren't many who enjoy such a sight, and I was not one of them. The boss had left a lot of meat. Cain had lost the three warriors who had been in charge of cutting their way through the jaws. They had been dissolved by the black slime. The priests revived the fallen right away. Since the boss had already died, their essences hadn't been devoured. The boss's corpse occupied three immense rooms. He turned out to be a fascinating specimen. The black slime only oozed in the first room, where the jaws had been, and it seemed that the jaws weren't controlled directly, but through some sort of telepathic link, since there was no connective tissue between the jaws and tongue in the first room and the creature in the next one. Effectively, the boss had been three separate creatures united in one whole. His third portion seemed to be responsible for processing the wastes that flowed from the second part, so we didn't even bother to check it out. Even though there was a high chance of finding a unique item, remaining undigested from some unknown heroes of the past, none of us felt like entering the reeking room, not even Plinto.
"What is this for?" I asked Stacy, pointing at the fillet of pancreas. "Surely it's not a cooking ingredient."
"Basically, at the moment, 20 such fillets are known, and each is worth its weight in gold, even more. There's a unique alchemical recipe called Merlin's Potion that boosts one of the main stats by 5, permanently. To make such a reagent, you need this fillet and several other rare ingredients. I know where to get the others, so Cain is right. We need to take this with us. I have an alchemist acquaintance who's familiar with Merlin's potion. Plinto, stop making faces. We're taking it all."
The fillet of pancreas was unpleasant to the touch as well as to the sight. Soft, slimy, wriggling. Blech! It's a good thing that Barleona doesn't take into account the size and weight of items in your bag. A third of the fleshy heap fit into my inventory without a problem, leaving myself 3 empty slots just in case. I gestured at Plinto's share of the heap, inviting him to gather it up. If Stacy manages to create Merlin's potion, then, well, a potion like that will be a very useful thing to have.
"If you tell anyone that I touched this, I'll kill you," muttered Plinto, stuffing the remainder into his bag.
"Agreed. It'll have a nice ring to it. Vampire adept Plinto the Bloodied collects pieces of meat for an elixir. It's like the perfect title for a horror flick."
"Cain, Gera, we've reached the 4th level, but we're still at the very beginning." Not wishing to intervene in Plinto and Anastaria's verbal fencing, to which everyone had already gotten used to, I sent our people out to explore the rest of the level. My boss was waiting for me here somewhere.
"Commander,
one of Kane's scouts reported about a minute later to the necromancer.
You should probably take a look at this.
And what is it? Asked Kane, staring at the mysterious construction.
It looks like the labyrinth, replied Anastaria, examining the assembly hanging before us.
A three-dimensional one.
About 20 meters ahead of us, in violation of all laws of physics, such as gravity and Euclidean geometry, hung a cube. It was not touching the floor, so we could assume that it was somehow suspended, and yet the cube was constantly spinning around all three of its axes, like a piece of iron in a magnetic trap. The cube was fully transparent. I could clearly see the door on its other side, the exit from the level and the dungeon as a whole. However, we were separated from this tantalizing goal by flashes of fire, blades, water, and something dark and scary which intermittently appeared along the entire internal perimeter of the cube. A fanciful labyrinth occupied the inside of the cube. It was instantly clear that it would be impossible to pass through the labyrinth if the cube remained motionless. The paths through were too dispersed and chaotic, at first glance, at least. I should add that the dimensions of the cube were no less than 30 meters in each direction, and how this enormous machine found its way into Glarnis is a question for the developers.
"I had a toy like that when I was a kid," said Plinto. "You need to find the start point, place the ball on it, and then very carefully, rotating the sphere, mine was a sphere, guide the ball to the center point. This looks about the same. If I'm not mistaken, there should be a control lever in the center of the cube, which we'll have to pull. The only question is how do we get there?
Especially considering that the planes aren't static and keep rotating. I've been observing them for over a minute and haven't noticed any repetitions," Anastaria added. "As for the fire, water, daggers, and other bells and whistles, which, as you can see, aren't only at the edges of the cube, that's all there to keep us from going out of bounds, falling, and failing the challenge. Man, what do you say?"
What could I say? That I'm in utter shock? That I'm in a total panic? That it seems easier to me to return to the surface and try to reach the castle through the gates? I don't know how to pass through this thing. I simply don't know. You can't do this kind of thing through reasoning, only through premonition. But would my premonition alone really see me through?
Guernica's warriors are the most agile creatures in this world, said Kane, as though coming to my aid. I count 5 entrances altogether. 5 of my warriors will enter the labyrinth and turn it off.
What can I say? Kane was mistaken. His warriors weren't that agile after all. 3 of the entrances turned out to be traps, which instantly killed the 3 warriors entering them. The other 2 managed to survive the horror show for 10 and 20 seconds respectively before failing, 1 into the flames, the other into the dark abyss. All 5 level 320 warriors died in a matter of seconds and took their frames with them, indicating that we couldn't revive them.
Your ancestor was quite the trickster, Kane seethed through his teeth to Gira. Who would think of using Devourer at every turn? I won't send my warriors to eternal oblivion, Gira said, shaking her head. Only Plinto can complete this labyrinth.
Very funny, growled the rogue, peering intently into the chaotically changing paths to the center.
This is just unreal. Although, did I run all those obstacle courses for nothing?
The rogue stroked his little vampire totem, flashed us a smile, cast acceleration, and dashed into the labyrinth at full speed.
"Revive him," Gira ordered her priests.
Plinto held out for an entire 20 seconds, running along 3 dimensions, after which he lost his balance and performed a graceful dive into the lava. In my view, any such dive would earn a solid 10.0 at competition, both for its artistic merits, that is, the cursing and the floundering, and for its splash. There was none.
"Main, this cube is for you. No way around it," smiled Anastaria,
welcoming me to enter the whirring colossus.
"Activate your premonition and dive on in. There's no other way. It's pointless to observe the motions and try to remember their sequence. Like I said, the way is ever-changing. Give it a shot."
I glanced over at the resurrected Plinto, who simply shrugged as if to say, "I did what I could, at Kane, at Gira, at Stacy," tossed my head as if casting off excess thoughts, and sighed heavily. It looked like I would need to jump in. I approached the starting point and simply stood there for some time, trying to calm my nerves. Despite my outward calm, I was shaking inside, and I didn't even know why. Even if I failed, I'd be revived, but to realize that I hadn't lived up to the challenge specially designed for me, and that, as a result, we wouldn't be able to complete the dungeon or get the first kill, it was all such a big responsibility, a heavy burden, an onerous... Hold on now. What the hell is going on with me anyway? Never have I been so anxious, even before an exam or a date with a girl. Are they putting thoughts in my head again? As soon as this last thought occurred to me, my shivering stopped. Entirely. My mind cleared, and submitting to the sudden impulse, I divided my consciousness. One eye was standing and waiting for the entrance to the labyrinth to appear, while the other eye was already virtually charting his way through the tangled paths in search of the optimal way through. I ignored the first 2 entrances that appeared before me. As soon as my first eye wanted to move in their direction, the other eye would hold him back. Not those. Even though the other 3 entrances will kill you, those 2 are off limits. It seemed that something had changed about them. Shutting my eyes, I touched the surface rushing past me and simply listened to my premonition. 2 times entrances appeared, which my second eye could see, but each of them had something bad associated with it, something negative, so I let them pass, waiting for the next. Finally, my entrance appeared, the same one that had incinerated one of Kane's warriors. And yet in my case, this entrance was illuminated. And I mean illuminated in my mind, since I hadn't opened my eyes yet. After all, my second eye could see everything around me. The first consciousness, the one responsible for my physical body, remained comfortably blind. A step forward, a warning cry from Gira, cut short by someone elbowing her in the ribs. 2 quick steps back, and instantly a jump to the side, rotating 90 degrees. My head was spinning, because the leap had turned into a fall to the ground, which forced me to jump to my feet upon landing, and stick out my leg high and forward, because the cube had already rotated, and the ground was now right before my still-shut eyes. 2 mincing steps forward and a high jump, stretching taut as a string and trying to make it over the rail. The floor had suddenly become the ceiling, and the rail was the only thing between me and the freezing water below. Roll. Leap. Sprint. Land. Several times I was forced to latch on to the edge of the platform with both hands and spin with it in different directions, since my other eye couldn't think of what to do next. After a minute of being in the labyrinth, I allowed myself to do that which I should have forbidden myself from even thinking about at the beginning. I looked around to see how much was left. This was my great mistake, because in that very moment, the first eye took control from my second eye and thought triumphantly, "All I have to do is reach out my arm and the deed's done." My dive into the lava wouldn't have earned a medal. The splash was too great.
"Ragrid wishes to resurrect you. Do you accept?"
"To make it almost the entire way on your first attempt, that's quite something," said Plinto reverently, as soon as I returned to normal life. "If I hadn't tried it myself, I'd think it was easy. I have to say, man, A+.
"Agreed. That was beautiful, man," Anastaria said encouragingly. "I confess, I didn't think that you could make it that far, but I'll show you the video later. That was a virtuoso performance. As for your misstep, I got the impression that something threw you off. Was it that voice again?"
"No, it's my fault," I replied grimly, got to my feet, and approached the cube again. It was going to be a long day. They had to revive me 18 times in total. This is how many attempts it took me to understand that reaching the control level was impossible. No matter what Anastaria and Plinto said, no matter how they encouraged me, it was clear that I couldn't complete the cube. In any case, not in this life, not as an ordinary human, since an ordinary... blast! And of course, as an ordinary human.
"Dan, are you sure you want to try it again?"
Anastaria asked, when I abruptly jumped to my feet again and made my way to the cube. I couldn't put off testing my hunch any longer. Kane and Gira were already long since discussing a plan of returning to the surface and storming the castle. The mercenary was explaining the locations of buildings within the walls, since she was the only one to have been inside. At the moment, however, my task was to be more than human.
"Trust me, Stacy," I replied, approaching the starting point. My motto for the next few moments was going to be, "No more thinking with your head." I had attempted the cube 18 times in the ordinary way as an ordinary player, in my primary form. And yet, I had a special ability that drastically set me apart from the vast majority of other players. I knew how to fly. Why scurry around the cube trying to anticipate its turns and rotations? I could fly through it. Taking a deep breath and once more ridding myself of the growing shiver, I turned into my dragon form, folded my wings, and dived into the entrance that appeared before me. The journey had begun. Once only several meters remained between me and the internal surface, I unfurled my wings, twirled, and flew over the flaming surface, trying to find a way of reaching the center. It turns out that 30 meters isn't much space, particularly when your wingspan accounts for 3 meters on its own. I was forced to turn around after a second or two in order to avoid slamming into the interior surface of the cube. Maybe my idea of taking flight wasn't quite so accurate? Although, who said that dragons only know how to fly? Flapping my wings several times, I soared up several meters and latched onto the edge of some kind of structure with my claws. The cube was too small to allow flight. That was a tough fact. A human couldn't reach the center of the cube. That was another tough fact.
However, as a dragon, I could safely ignore the cube's rotation and, using my claws, tail, and wings, reach the control lever directly. If there is another way, why not use it? Achievement earned. First completion of the Glarness Dungeon. Achievement reward. Your attractiveness for all NPCs has increased by 1. Message for the player. In 5 months' time, you will be teleported to an audience with the Emperor of Malabar. You may take 2 companions with you. For this, you will have to give them the invitation letter in the course of 5 months. You may obtain the invitations in any branch office of Barleona Bank. As soon as I realized what I had to do, the problem was solved almost instantly. Like a bull in a china shop, breaking and shattering everything along my way, I crawled single-mindedly in the direction of the control lever. No one ever said that the cube had to remain undamaged, and there was therefore no reason to treat it with kid's gloves.
"Welcome to Glarness,"
the mercenary said triumphantly as soon as we reached the shimmering exit to the dungeon. By the way, as I was making my way through the now motionless cube, another solution occurred to me. In my dragon form, I could comfortably fly from one end of the cube to the other, and therefore ferry everyone one by one to the other side. As soon as the cube ceased spinning, nothing kept me from flying there and back. "Plinto, you go first," I said, sending the rogue into Glarness. We didn't know what awaited us on the other side, perhaps another trap, and Gira and Kane's warriors could still come in handy.
"Sir, yes, sir," grinned the rogue, and darted into the portal.
"Clear," came the message in the clan chat 10 seconds later. "Come on, then, no phantoms in sight."
The Glarness throne room had borne Altamita's immense weight without the slightest sign of stress. If it weren't for the layer of dust, a scenario, there's no dust in Barleona normally, and several fallen paintings, you could comfortably put on a ball in here and hold audiences. There was plenty of space for it.
"The walls keep the phantoms from entering this place," said Gira, lighting the torches along the hall's perimeter. "Oh, look, that's me."
One of the portraits that had fallen to the floor depicted a young, smiling woman who bore a striking resemblance to Gira. Only in the portrait, the girl was about 15 years old, whereas our mercenary was at least 30.
"A little more. I can sense you. You are so near."
"Kane," I said to the necromancer, "now that we've reached Glarness, tell us, please, who Urusei is and why you are trying to kill him."
"Urusei is a Naga demon. Many millennia ago..."
"Stop! Gira!" yelled Anastaria, cutting off Kane. In the course of lighting the torches and examining the paintings, the mercenary had approached a door and was now trying with all her might to slide aside its massive bolt bar. Several warriors from her squad were trying to help her in this, while the remainder had formed a wall around their leader, guarding her from danger. And it was looking like it was we who were that danger.
"Plinto, stop her!" I yelled.
But it was already too late. With an immense rumble, the door of Imperial Oak swung ajar, and the first phantoms darted into the hall. Paying the mercenaries no heed, they flew in our direction, their red eyes clearly demonstrating that they weren't seeking a friendly chat.
"Gira's squad, 26 warriors, 3 priests, 2 mages, has left your clan, in violation of their agreement with you. Do you wish to file a complaint?"
The mercenaries' frames blinked and vanished from the raid party. Gira had left not only the clan, but the raid party as well, and in doing so committed an unheard-of deed for an NPC mercenary. She had violated a contract with a player. That's not supposed to happen.
Kane, defense!
Anastaria commanded somewhere in the background, arranging a defense against the Phantoms. Notifications began to flicker past about damage taken, about the deaths of Kane's warriors, so I pushed yes, still unable to comprehend why the woman had done what she did. Abandoning players in a bind where they needed help the most is very bad, so it was important that Gira be admonished, if not outright punished. How could someone act like that? And, by the way, why are the Phantoms ignoring Gira and her people anyway?
Do you wish to summon the local Guardian to investigate?
Yes. Only the Guardian could explain to me what the developers had thought up in this location, stop the assault of the Phantoms, and...
No!
Urasai's scream pierced my head and deafened me to the point that my sight went dim. When I regained my composure, the situation in the throne room had changed drastically. A mere handful of Kane's warriors remained. Of the 50 fighters that had joined us at the beginning, only 7 were still alive. Gira and her men remained standing untouched by the wall, away from the fray. The Phantoms continued to pour into the hall, only to encounter the shadows and vanish in a bright flash. Anastaria and Plinto were standing stock still like statues, and only a single sentient in the midst of this chaos seemed happy. This was Guernica, from whose hands flowed the aforementioned shadows, extinguishing the Phantoms.
"You woke up at last?"
he asked me considerately, and instantly grabbed me and set me to my feet.
"Didn't I tell you that we would meet soon, and promised you that you wouldn't enjoy it very much?"
"I call upon the Guardian!" I shouted, understanding perfectly well that the Heralds wouldn't set foot on Narlak territory, whereas I'd already summoned the Guardian anyway. He should definitely be able to stop Guernica.
"I am all ears, oh my failed apprentice," smirked Guernica.
At this point, the Phantoms gave up their assault, and the Lord of the Shadows put down his hands with a sigh of relief. Flexing his shoulders, as if they were sore, Guernica added,
"It's been a long time since I've had to put in so much effort. These Phantoms sure have grown since our last meeting. Grown quite a bit."
"You're the Guardian?" My astonishment knew no bounds. "But how? And why?"
"Gira, take care of these two." Guernica nodded at Anastaria and Plinto. "Bind Kane and his warriors as well. It's not good practice to defy the terms of an agreement, and the necromancer, if I'm not mistaken, remains our shaman's ally. Meanwhile, Mayan and I are going to take a walk around his castle. By the way, I congratulate you on your recent acquisition. A very tasty reward."
"Yes, my master."
Gira bowed her head and turned to Kane.
"Put down your arms."
"Commander..."
Kane bowed in turn, utterly knocking the last scrap of understanding out of my head. Gira, the inheritor of Glarnas, was a servant of Guernica, and one for whom Kane was a subordinate?
"Dan, get out of here! Cast a teleport and get out!"
As soon as Guernica unblocked Anastaria, her voice popped into my head.
"I'll warn you just in case," the Emperor of Shadow said immediately, "that I have updated the Cartassian Transformers, and now no one can either come here or flee from here, neither the Heralds nor the Emperor
nor even Illuna herself. The main characters in the story that is to take place here are now going to be you and me. Even the owner of this castle won't be able to interfere.
Stop! You fool!
This time, Urasai's voice resounded all around us, not solely in my mind. We departed the throne room and found ourselves in a half-destroyed chamber, the one-time reception hall of Glarnas.
Urasai is angry, smirked Garanika, pointing somewhere overhead. That's okay. We don't need him anyway. Our way lies downward.
Shadows poured from the hands of the former shaman, destroying everything in their path. Furniture, stones, fallen walls, the floor itself. Right in front of us, a passage appeared, receding downward. Garanika pointed at it and said,
Gira?
Yes, Your Majesty.
The mercenary slipped past us, uttering another telling phrase. The passage began to shimmer, and I beheld a spiral staircase winding down.
After you, Mayan, said Garanika, pointing at the stairwell and relishing his victory as well as my utter incomprehension at what was happening. It's time to make of you the shaman you deserve to be.
Someone pushed me roughly, and I plummeted down, head over heels, losing 1% of my hit points at every step. If I get lucky, there'll be 80 of them, and I'll find myself respawning away from this nightmare. But I was not lucky, for the stairs only had 55 steps, and a flimsy wooden door that I busted through without even noticing it.
"Thanks for the invitation."
Garanika appeared beside me, and light illuminated the room we were now in.
"I didn't invite you,"
I muttered, frowning from the fact that Gira's healers had just completely healed me. Smashing my head against the wall wouldn't do much good now.
"Of course you did," said Garanika, approaching a plinth which was holding up something black and half-shimmering. You even demanded I appear. It's thanks to you alone that I will become the most powerful creature in Barleona. So powerful that even if Illuna and Tartarus join forces, they still won't be able to oppose me. The time of shadow is upon us.
Stop and reconsider. Do not do this.
The heart of chaos, said Garanika, without paying Urasai's screams any attention.
He did not pick up the strange, pulsating object, however, but turned to me instead.
Many millennia ago, the founder of this city, back then a simple shepherd, encountered the Lord of Chaos on his way home. No one knows how the Lord of Chaos had reached our world. What is known is that he corrupted the shepherd's mind, forced him to drink his blood and rip out his heart. Only in this manner could the ruler effect his rebirth in the future. The shepherd, having tasted the blood of chaos, became one of the mightiest warriors of his day, and founded this town, hiding the heart of his master deep below its foundations. For thousands of years, Glarnas was ruled by the followers of chaos, who dreamed of the time when their ruler would be reborn. Even this child, Garanika gestured Gira to come over and tousled her hair, dreamed of only one thing, the rebirth of her master.
Garenika's hands slipped down to the woman's neck, clenched, and ripped off her head. A fountain of blood gushed forth, and the mercenary's body collapsed to the floor, twitched several times, and fell still.
"Asgardian, I have punished the violator," smirked Garenika. "So, you should have no complaints now. You will receive your monetary damages in Barleona Bank, whenever it is you reach it next. Until we meet again, Mayen, I hope it will be very soon."
"Hold on," I stopped Garenika. "Before you kill me, tell me what's going on here."
"As you yourself would say in this kind of situation, as if," grinned the Lord of Shadow. "Shyam, my brother, told me how you became High Shaman. You have no idea what it means to be a great or elemental shaman, much less a high one. You are an unworthy apprentice who has been lucky. I am sorry to disappoint you, but your luck has run out. Until we meet again, beginner shaman, I will make sure to come up with something diverting for you."
The world around dissolved, and when it returned, I found myself staring at a painfully familiar notification.
"You have arrived at the Labyrinth of Desires, a proving ground for shamans. Your performance in the proving ground will determine your class level in accordance to your current strength and capacity. Attention, you have already completed the Labyrinth of Desires. Do you wish to return to Glarnas?"
"Yes."
Shyam had told Garenika that I don't make much of a shaman, and he, in his turn, decided to punish me by forcing me to do the Labyrinth of Desires again in the hopes that I would be demoted from high shaman to beginner shaman? Well, the joke was on him.
"Stacy, where are you?"
I asked as soon as I entered the room. To my immense disappointment, neither Garenika nor the Heart of Chaos were there any more. They had either ascended or left Glarnas altogether.
"In the throne room," came her reply instantly. "Did you see the notification about what we did?"
"No, I was at the loading screen this entire time," I quickly replied, running up the stairs.
"What did we do?" "We helped Garenika become a god."
"What?" The news made me halt in my tracks.
"Iluna has rejected me," Stacy said sadly, as soon as I reached the throne room. "If we don't stop Garenika, I will cease to be a paladin."
"And I a rogue."
Unlike Anastaria, Plinto was happy with his lot. Bound by several layers of rope, he was all but relishing the unfolding events.
"I'm not much of a rogue at the moment, anyway. Well, I'm not a rogue at all, actually. I can't use any of my class powers anymore."
"Hang on. I'll summon the spirits to free you. We can chat then," I said, trying not to panic.
"Due to the Heart of Chaos scenario, you have been stripped of your shamanic powers. For more information, please speak with the head of the Shamanic Council."
"Judging by our fearless leader's fearless face, he's shamanically impotent," Plinto remarked caustically. "Turn into your dragon form and tear the ropes with your claws."
"Mayen, just make sure not to kill Cain and his warriors,"
Anastaria reminded me as I was about to turn into a dragon. Only now did I begin to comprehend the full extent of Garenika's grand plan. If the Supreme Spirits rejected me, as the notification suggested already happened, then I would be forced to linger in the labyrinth of desires for all eternity, or until the character stuck button finally appeared.
Yes, dragon, smirked the necromancer. Don't forget about our agreement.
What have you done?
I'd never heard such wrath in my head as now emanated from Urasai's voice. A part of my consciousness began to howl and suffer, so I turned into a dragon and tore the ropes binding Plinto and Anastaria.
Cain, who is Urasai? I asked the question that still occupied me.
I am Urasai!
Glarnas shook from the scream of the unseen creature, evoking a grin from Cain.
He is Urasai, the monster that's in Altamita, or more precisely, in Altamita's throne room. Shall we go have a look? If my master has ordered me to perform my contract, then so it will be. I remain your worthy ally.
Altamita was stunning. I had already seen something approaching such ornamental and majestic buildings in Narlak, but I had never witnessed such a symbiosis of beauty and ergonomics as here. Every room, in an emergency, could become a decent defensive area. All you had to do was pull several levers and move the tables together. All of the furniture was fashioned from imperial oak, which made it an extremely durable obstacle in the path of attackers. Several thousand years' worth of travels across the Freeland had not dimmed the luster of this castle, whose owner was none other than I. I was particularly happy to see all the weapons hanging around the walls. They were not only a nice decorative touch, but genuinely useful arms.
Celebrate, residents of Malabar. The Emperor has been saved. 20 courageous men led by Ekeler, head of the Phoenix Clan, and the inimitable Hellfire, the greatest warrior of our continent, have found a way to rid the imperial throne from Garanika's cursed dagger. Hallowed be their names unto the centuries. In honor of the Emperor's rescue, the Empire announces a week of festivities. All imperial merchandise costs 50% less. You have failed the creation of a holy artifact quest. The quest has been removed from your quest list. Your clan has lost the best of the best achievement.
Bastard! Plinto seethed into nowhere in particular. That's all right. We'll meet again.
My master has fulfilled his bargain, smirked Cain. Your emperor shall live.
You know something? Anastaria asked, all but grabbing the necromancer.
I am not familiar with my master's entire plan, but this part of it I know fully. Ekeler was offered a deal. He had to prevent several free citizens, that is, Mayen and Anastaria, from entering Altamita through the front gates. They had to instead enter through an underground passage, circumventing the Phantoms and Urasai. Ekeler fulfilled his task, and in return was granted the ability to destroy the dagger. My master never goes back on his word.
But how?
What the heck is that?
Plinto exclaimed, cutting off Stacy and pointing at a scarlet-red crystal the size of a baby. We had entered Altamita's throne room, where, according to the Patriarch, we were supposed to discover some kind of phantom with a crown on its head. But instead, we stopped, flabbergasted, before the object in the center of the room.
Rogzar's Crystal. Class Static Artifact.
The crystal's owner receives Rogzar's curse, -75% to movement speed, -50% to all stats, -90% to regeneration of hit points, mana, and energy, -90% to XP. May not be sold, dropped, stolen, or destroyed. Status, activated and bound. Former owner, Creel, free citizen. Current owner, Urasai. When activated, Rogzar's crystal allows the sentient to ignore a location's holy status, blocks all abilities above level 40, imprisons the owner of the crystal in the crystal's location, prevents the crystal's owner from taking damage from abilities over level 40.
This is the means by which Guernica entered Glarnas and took over the Heart of Chaos,
said a hefty voice behind us, the same I had heard in my head and throughout the castle. I was thankful that he wasn't yelling as before. As if on cue, we all turned and stared at the snow-white angel, unfurling his wings and looking down at us from 3 meters above us.
"Mayan, you were asking who Urasai was," smirked Kane. "There he is before you, the Naga demon, doom of the Pran, scourge of the Lornix. This creature has many titles, but the basic gist comes down to a single fact. This white-winged chicken..."
"Quiet, servant of shadow,"
Urasai said, in a decidedly un-angelic tone, as a flaming sword appeared in his hand, and with one swift motion, Cain and all of Cain's warriors fell dead around us. The angel turned to us.
"You brought Guernica here. You allowed him to capture the Heart of Chaos. You already lost your classes. Now I shall strip you of what remains, your lives.
Stacy, sing!" There was such hate on the angel's face that I didn't have time to think and instinctively turned into my dragon form. Who would have thought that Urasai was actually an angel of Illuna? And yet, even if he were the creator of Barleona himself, he had killed my ally, and I would avenge this deed, even if it hadn't threatened me.
"Plinto, vampire, and full throttle! They took our classes, but not our races!"
Dragon, siren, and vampire now faced one wrathful angel, whose level was still entirely unclear. Either this creature was beyond levels altogether, or he was so much stronger than us that there'd be no point in fighting him to begin with. But I was sick and tired of dying over nothing. If this angel wants to have a chat, that's his choice.
During the capture of the castle scenario, you may use the Dragon's Breath spell.
Raising her arms, Anastaria began to sing her mesmerizing song. Plinto turned into black fog and enveloped the angel, while I targeted Urasai and, hoping that the vampire wouldn't be hurt, began to blast flames over him. It was we who were responsible for leading Guernica to Glarnas. Well, it happens, especially considering the scenario was created by experienced psychologists. But this was no reason to attack us, without trying to discover the truth first. Acceleration level 1.
"You destroyed everything I was protecting! Everything that I abandoned Illuna for!"
There he goes, yelling again. Well, to hell with him. We lost our class abilities. Neither the spirits nor Illuna, nor whoever the rogues appeal to, can hear us anymore. We have already incurred a punishment for what we did. Punishing us again is just dumb. Acceleration level 2.
I created the perfect defense and awaited your arrival as the rightful owner of the castle to hand over the castle to you, but you betrayed me.
I'm sorry, Mr. Angel, but you're mistaken. I didn't even know who you were. What did you terrorize the world with the phantoms for? To get me to come here? I can't say they were too kind to me when I first came to Altamita. Acceleration level 3.
Guernica will become a god, and Barleona will sink into shadow.
You exaggerate, Urasai. If Guernica will become the terror and nightmare of this world, Barleona will create some means of destroying him. The Creator lives, and will not allow his world to be wiped from the face of the earth. Acceleration level 4.
There are only 2 months of light left before the advent of utter shadow. You will all die. No! Pity me. Have mercy.
You have completed the inevitable evil quest. You have earned the Owner Level 1 achievement. You are the owner of a Level 1 castle. You have earned the Owner Level 2 achievement.
Panting heavily and trying to ignore my horrible headache, I looked at the angel lying on the floor before us. He no longer resembled the majestic creature who had slain Cain. We were looking at a charred, whimpering, and pathetic soldier of Illuna. I felt such revulsion in my soul that there wasn't a shred of joy at having finally become the owner of a level 24 castle. To the contrary, I felt utterly empty. A new scenario had just begun, which would last 2 months. And this scenario would more than likely encompass both empires, and neither Anastaria nor Plinto nor I would have any places in it, because we had lost our abilities.
Speak,
I managed with difficulty through my parched throat. The time had come to discover what had actually occurred in my castle. My legs gave in, and I slumped to the floor. I hadn't the strength to remain standing. Out of the corner of my eyes, I noticed that Anastaria and Plinto were stirring on the floor, coming too. Very good. They wouldn't have to ask me to relate what had happened. Urasai made an unbelievable effort, raised up from the floor, and began to speak. The Heart of Chaos had been securely concealed in the depths of Glarnas. No one knew of its existence until Illuna took note. The castle's inheritor had fallen into Guernica's hands. By that point, the goddess had understood what she could expect from this shaman who was so interested in the shadows, and she developed a plan to destroy Glarnas once and for all. The residents of the castle had been permeated by the hate of the heart and could no longer live anywhere but in Glarnas. How Gira had managed to go on living far from the town remained a mystery, and yet the goddess could not simply destroy the castle at her whim. But she did remember Altamita, which teleported around the Freelands, and so she decided to send Urasai to Altamita to capture it, destroy or devour the Chief Phantom, and teleport Altamita to its final destination, right onto Glarnas. After this, Altamita would never jump again, remaining forever as an unassailable monument standing guard over the Heart of Chaos. But everything did not go according to plan. One of the free citizens named Creel brought Rogzar's crystal to Altamita, which simply blocked all of Urasai's abilities. Urasai remained mighty and undefeatable as before, but only within Altamita. The angel no longer had any power over Glarnas.
Iluna came to his aid. She cast a blessed circle around the castle, which Guernica could not pass through, even using his harbinger powers. Meanwhile, in order to keep the warriors of the nearby city Narlak from leveling up too fast, Urusei began to periodically release his phantoms. In this manner, he took on all the sins for the pain and death caused by the phantoms on himself, slowly becoming a fallen angel. He knew what he was doing, but keeping Guernica from the heart of chaos was more important than the fate of one angel. For this reason, Urusei chased away the barbarians who lived nearby, for they were breeding too much hate and evil in the surrounding lands. When the angel felt the owner nearby, he was very happy, but he found he could not converse with him, as Rogzar's crystal blocked the owner's responses. All that was left to Urusei was to wait and hope that the owner would find a way to enter the castle to receive his rightful crown. That's how it happened, and yet, for some reason, the owner chose to take the most difficult way there was, through the Glarnas dungeon. His blocked abilities kept the angel from seeing who was coming with the owner, but just in case, he deployed a guard of phantoms at the entrance to the Glarnas throne room. As it turned out, not for naught. As soon as the doors opened, shadows, the essences of Guernica, flew forward. The warriors of the greatest foe of this world had reached a place that led directly to the heart of chaos. The angel lost his cool and ordered his phantoms to destroy everyone who came from the dungeon. And yet the most unbelievable thing happened. The owner himself summoned Guernica. This was the only way that Guernica could enter without having to pass through Iluna's blessing. Taking the heart, Guernica called on his amulet and instantly vanished. Someone had summoned him.
In return for being summoned by Ekeler, Guernica gave him the item that could destroy the dagger.
Stacy exhaled, realizing how her father had freed the Emperor's throne.
But how did he become the Guardian?
He killed the previous Guardian and swore to the Creator that he would voluntarily perform his duties over the next couple months until the new Guardian grew up. The Creator accepted his oath, replied the gradually recovering angel. His wounds were closing, his wings straightening, while his torn and charred clothes were regaining their earlier whiteness.
"Why weren't you mentioned anywhere?" asked Anastaria. "I looked all over, and the only mention of Urusei was as a Naga demon, not an angel."
"Because when I became a fallen angel, my name was struck from the history of this world, because I consciously chose this path and was ready to see it through to its end, because I no longer exist. Mayan, you did not kill me, and now I have the ability to depart the way I like. I want to make you a final present. As long as Rogzar's crystal remains in this castle, you will not be able to become Altamira's rightful owner. I can no longer join Iluna's ranks, but in some small way I can atone for my fall. Give me your hand, O owner."
I offered him my open hand, and the angel sliced it with his wing, opening a bleeding wound. Several drops of blood, which supposedly didn't exist in Barleona, fell onto and were absorbed by the angel's snow-white plumage, coloring it a bright red hue. Urusei darted over to the crystal, grabbed it, and vanished with a deafening boom. Altamira had fully
passed into my possession.
Castle interface available. Do you wish to teleport your castle to a different location? The cooldown for the castle's teleport function is 3 months.
I do. I don't know who this Creel is, but I would need to find him and have a gentle chat with him. Someone had to take responsibility for what had happened in my castle. Let that someone be Creel. The walls began to vibrate, indicating that the castle was about to jump. I didn't have any desire to return the castle to the Freelands, so I picked up the crown lying beside the throne, placed it atop my head, and took my seat on the throne itself. The time had come to free the phantoms and begin my rule. The rightful owner had taken his rightful place. This concludes The Phantom Castle by Vasily Mahanyenko, translated by Boris Smirnov, narrated by Jonathan Yen, a member of SAG-AFTRA. Copyright 2016 by V. Mahanyenko. English translation copyright 2016 by Boris Smirnov. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Magic Dome Books and was produced in the year 2017 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit Tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks and to take advantage of special offers.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.